White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 558.
You're listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the White Rocket Entertainment Network.
Bye bye, Bo! Touchdown Auburn!
The kick is good! Auburn wins!
Shivers just ran through a man! Touchdown Auburn!
Welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with thewareaglereader.com and by people like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family, our very own long-suffering, patient, loving Patreon.com family. I'm Van Allen Flexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
John, we had a week off a while back for your vacation. We had a week off last week for my vacation, but hopefully we are vacationed out and we are back. We are back, are we not?
We are back. I don't know about vacationed out.
I just told my wife.
I could use a little more.
I told my wife about an hour ago. I said, I need a vacation from my vacation because, honestly, we all go and do more during our vacations than we do just in a normal work week. It's ridiculous. So she's a task mistress. But we get a lot done. We do get a lot done, man. So, in the time since we last spoke to the audience, you and I have spoke in person, which was awesome. Got to see you finally. And you're a cool group there. But in the time since we last spoke to our audience here, the book is out. The book came out. August 1st, as promised, the book came out. So what are you thinking about that?
It's very exciting. Go get your copy at Amazon.com. You know, you can request your local bookstore to get it if you're interested in that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And we appreciate all the people who have been purchasing it and posting it. And if you know somebody that you think would enjoy the book, feel free to give it to them as a gift. You know, Christmas is not that far away. Start thinking in that line already.
So. That's right. I do regret that if I'd thought about it back about 6 months to a year ago, I would have thought maybe with a big book coming out, we needed to be in Auburn this fall, because people are asking about seeing us and getting their copy signed and everything. But if you're going to Texas A&M and you happen to bring it with you, we can hook you up, because we will be, if all systems stay green, all systems stay go, we will be at College Station for the Texas A&M game. That's the next time. This will be a rare year where you and I get to hang out together twice in 1 year.
Crazy town.
It is. It is the highway to Crazy Town. And that'll be cool. I just wish that United would quit changing my flight around, because now they got me leaving Sunday at noon instead of at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon or whatever. But airlines are being weird right now, and I understand that. But anyway, our book is out. And it's big. It's called We Believed, A Lifetime of Auburn Football, Volume 1. God, I can just reel this out now. 1975 to 1998, meaning it starts out with the end of Shug Jordan and with Barfield coming in. And as I told one of our Alabama followers on Twitter, he asked about that, and I said, man, we get through Barfield like Cadillac through the Alabama defense on the first play of the 2003 Iron Bowl. I didn't hear anything from him after that. But we do. We get through Barfield pretty quick, and we get on into the arrival of Pat Dye. And that's pretty much what 80%, I think, 75% of the book is about Pat Dye. You know, based on the framework of the conversations that you and I had over 2 or 3 years about Pat Dye, and then from there expanding out to covering the games, the plays. We have, you know, player quotes after the games. We have all this good stuff in there. Interviews with people now. I mean, we added so much new stuff that nobody's ever seen or heard before has been added in there. So, and then the last, 20% of the book is about the Terry Bowden years. That's how we get up through 98. And that's, again, based on a conversation you and I and your brother Pat had. And then we kind of spiral out from there and have stuff like Cole Kublik talking about those years, because he played for Terry. And we have some other really good stuff in there. Will Collier had some insights. Jake Crane, J-Boy, had some insights. There's a bunch of stuff in there. So yeah, I mean, it's pretty much Barfield, you know, Shug to Barfield, and then you get a whole lot of Pat Dye and a little bit of Terry Bowden, and that's where we kind of had to end it because it was closing in on 500 pages, and that's, you know. So volume two, whenever it comes out, will pick up with Tuberville coming in 99 and carry all the way through. At least Gus, we'll see how far we want to go beyond that. So we still got to do the last episode of the.
Yes, we do.
In fact, we've got to go back and add a little bit more to episode 9 because we recorded, I think, most of episode 9, but that was before Gus was summarily executed. And so we need to kind of go in and add that last season and what happened to him and the arrival of Harson. So we can cram all that into the end of episode 9. And then episode 10 has always been called the future of Auburn football. The problem is the future keeps arriving. We have to keep pushing it out, you know.
Well, at some point, you have to stop and just talk about the future. And then, it passes by.
Yeah. So, well, yeah, when we recorded episode 9, Gus was in pretty good shape. And now episode 9 isn't done yet, and he's gone. So we'll figure it out. Anyway, and the thing I wanted to say about the book, one other thing, we appreciate our patrons so much ordering special signed copies that John and I are putting together. And we just want to tell you how sorry we are that Amazon, for some reason, is being so slow because they sent them to us too. And so there are people that are getting their individual copies they just ordered direct from Amazon. They're getting them in like a week or less. And for some reason, because I ordered a giant box of them to go to John to sign and send to me to sign and then to send out to you guys, they're just taking forever to get that box to John. He's not sitting on them. He's not holding out, we promise, nor am I. We're just sitting back here waiting. So Amazon says it'll be in a few more days, and then we're going to expedite this sucker to you as fast as humanly possible. So fast as John and I can sign our names and whatever else, we'll have those suckers out. So, all right. We got some fall practice news to talk about. What's the latest going on there, John?
Practice? Talking about practice? Sorry. I waited till Van started drinking his drink, and then I said
playoffs?
That.
Playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs? You kidding me? Playoffs?
No. This is the Allen Iverson quote.
All right. I'm sorry. Yes.
No. It's good. It is exciting to actually have real football to talk about and not speculation about future football. We don't have games to talk about yet, but we have practice.
Yes, we do.
I think the first news, that's kind of still a little bit in the speculation side is, where is Tyrone Truesdale? Where in the world is Tyrone Truesdale? Apparently not on the football practice field, supposedly. So,
uh-oh.
Yeah, that's not good, considering he was probably going to be the starting nose tackle in the new 3-4 defense. So we'll see if he reappears. And if he does not, then we'll go forward from there and figure out who that's going to be.
We got a couple of other candidates, right? No, it's not.
No. But he is a veteran, right? A guy that had played a lot of snaps. And, a guy also that I think physically kind of fit that position pretty well. Mm. You need a big, stout guy who can hold the point of attack in the middle there. I think he could do that. And, without him, we're looking at kind of Tony Fair, the big transfer from UAB. Probably be the first guy off the line. And maybe some of the JUCO guys we brought in last year. We'll see. It's possible that he reemerges and something else is going on. But in the short term, he is not out there. So.
Not good. I did see that, you had a note about the young players besides there's a young player. I'm all confused. Let me back up. We have young players who are doing well.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's always, to me, one of the best parts of fall camp is hearing about guys who hadn't been around a long time and that they're playing well and making plays and making stuff happen. And so I think that's always exciting when you hear those guys' names. And we've heard some of those guys' names. I mean, we've heard some players that, have been out there that we hadn't heard much about before. I think we Tarveris Dawson is a name we've heard a little bit about in the first week or so practice. He is a young wide receiver, a very fast guy, very explosive guy that, seems to be making some plays. I think obviously Dylan Brooks is a big, be basically a freshman, but it, you know, kind of a guy that signed with Tennessee and then and technically transferred to us. He'd be an edge rusher. And I'm not counting the guys that, you know, Lee Hunter is a guy that was here in the spring and played the spring game. I think that guy's, you know, getting a lot of positive, you know, feedback, and he's going to be a player. So,
That sounds good. I mean, interesting thing, too, that happened. I didn't even have a note about this, but LSU can't take their quarterback back, right? Because they lost their they lost their starting guy, and their main other guy came to us.
Yeah, so they had three.
Okay.
Because they had two young guys. That this guy got hurt last year. The LSU quarterback that's hurt right now is Miles Brennan. Mm-hmm. He broke his arm. So he was expected to be the LSU starting quarterback last year and got hurt. Mm-hmm. And then it left them to the two young players, mm-hmm. you know, Finley and Max Johnson. And they both played a lot in the SEC. And Finley transferred to us with the idea that, you know, Johnson stayed and he would be competing with Brennan, and probably Brennan would be the starter. And I think people thought Brennan would be the starter. And if Finley had stayed, people would, you know, thought he would be competing with Johnson for the backup. And now Brennan's hurt again, and they're down to just Johnson after having three.
Yeah.
So not a good spot.
That's the world of the transfer portal that we're in now, mm-hmm. is that it's great for the players. They get to go where they have better opportunity. But, man, it is terrible for quality depth for almost everybody.
Yes, it's going to be a problem building depth.
Yeah, I mean, it makes even the biggest and baddest teams terrified if they lose their starter at some position. Their backup has left because they weren't the starter. That didn't used to be, you know, the case. It used to be you rode the bench and hoped that you get to play maybe by the time you graduated. Now, there's just a coming and a going.
It's true. And speaking of the depth and the coming and going and the young players, the other guy that's gotten a lot of buzz this, you know, so far is that Jarquez Hunter, the freshman running back from Mississippi.
Yes,
Everybody's very happy about him.
I've heard some things. Well, let me skip down here then, because we're talking about the running backs for a second. He's been getting good talk, right? The freshman. He's been getting talked up. We've got Tank, of course, and we've got Sean Shivers. And I was just reading earlier that people are saying that Tank, and there was even an interview with Tank where he said that he really had a hard time. I'm like, man, when you have a hard time, you still look really good. Do you realize Tank had the second best freshman season for a running back in Auburn history last year, even though he was out hurt for a couple of games in a shortened season? He had the second best.
And didn't play any non-conference easy games.
Right.
Only played against SEC teams.
Right. And yet he had the second best, second only to Mike Dyer. Mike Dyer got the record in 2010 as a freshman. Yeah. And so Tank said he did all that, not even really knowing what he was doing, not being familiar with the offense. He came in early, but then there was no early because of COVID. There was no early. So he says that, A, he likes the new offense, and B, he feels like he's a better fit for it. And Sean Shivers said that Tank was a better fit for it. And C, he's learning it. He's been learning it for weeks and months rather than being dropped down the middle of it. Go, got to go play Georgia, whoever, you know. So, and he's, of course, had a year in the extra in the weight room.
Weight program, yep.
And the food and the health and all that. And studying film and doing all those things. Sean Shivers and Owen Papo, who I trust their opinions, both said to expect much bigger things from Tank this year and Tank in this offense. Owen said you got to bring your A game basically to even try to tackle him in practice, that he's very, very tough. And so I'm hoping that that's accurate. I feel like between Tank and Shivers and this freshman, can we get through a regular Auburn season with those three guys?
Yes, I think we can.
Spread the carries around a little bit. Don't run Tank into the ground. But it's a long way. His own position coach was once given like 41 carries at Georgia.
Yeah, we're not doing that again.
that was a freshman. Cadillac's freshman year at Georgia, he got like 41 carries against Georgia. after that game, he was exhausted. They asked him about it, and I remember he said something like, well, that's what the coach asked me to do, and I did it. And I'm like, man. Of course, then the very next game, he went out there against Alabama and broke his collarbone. So you don't want to overdo it. But I did watch a little bit of last year's Tennessee game because I basically forgot we even played Tennessee last year. That game was just a – but that's the one where Tank got injured in like the first or second quarter. Mm-hmm. And Shivers – a little bit of DJ Williams, but Shivers kind of took over and carried the ball like the second, third quarter, and he looked really good.
Yeah.
He made some plays on Tennessee. It was Tennessee, but still. So
I am pro Sean Shivers as the backup running back. I think he can be productive in 5 to 10 carries per game.
He seems to me like the prototypical third down back that can block a little bit, that can go out and catch a pass in the flat, that can run a draw. He's not like a guy. He just never struck me as a guy you put in the I formation and pitch in the toss sweep. But he's like a he's more like that LSU back that was so good. He's not as good as that, but they used him that way in the NFL a lot on third as a third down back. I can't think. He was like the Patriots.
Falk is who you're talking
yes.
about.
Yeah, Kevin Falk.
He's not on the same planet as a receiver as Kevin Falk. Mm-hmm. And I think he genuinely is good running around the edge, like with the ball in his hand. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I don't love him running inside because of his size, but I think running around the edge, running on a sweep or an end around or, you know, whatever, with him with the ball in his hand, I like it. And it could be a screen or some kind of outside draw or something. I'm okay. Those things are good, but I think he's going to be okay as the backup running back. I think he's going to be productive. Like you're saying in that game, he shows some stuff. And I think he showed some stuff in other games last year. And I think, part of being a college player and being a veteran is kind of learning what you do well and don't do well. And, learn from your playing time and what was successful. So.
Yeah. I think he's one of those guys that thinks he can be a great inside running back. They always do, you know.
Yeah.
I think that he thinks that, and that isn't always the case. You get a lot of stuff for a loss of a yard or two. But he's fighting every inch of the way, though. He's fighting like a sure. Tasmanian devil. But so
fighting is a gaining yard, so.
Yeah, no, I agree. But he doesn't give up, though. I mean, he's still moving his legs, sure. Trying to get forward, trying to break tackles, and that can help. The other one I had was Zakobi McClain. I didn't realize this. Zakobi McClain led the nation in tackles last season and barely made any lists, any recognition, anything. He didn't even start the first two games last year and led the country 113 tackles. And supposedly he's gotten bigger and stronger and faster, and they're expecting bigger things from him too. I mean, I feel like I look at our team – and we have areas of concern we can talk about, offensive line, receivers, whatever. But I feel like we've got some really special players here and there. And I don't want to be crazy. And, of course, we got the barbecue show coming up to make actual predictions. I mean, it's factual, the prediction. Predictions sound like we're guessing. This is, factual transferal of knowledge from the barbecue to us, to the audience. But not to make a prediction or anything, but it reminds me of 93 when we were coming off kind of a mediocre year. We changed the coaching staff and we had a handful of really key players that came together for a very special season. So I'm not saying we're going to go 11-0 or 12-0 or whatever, although I'll take it. But you know what I mean? It's like we've just kind of got these guys all over the field that you're like, well, he's awesome. Well, that guy's really good. Oh, well, that guy, but you keep finding that, from defensive backs to linebackers to our kicker to our running back, we've got special guys all over the field, man. I just don't feel like the barbecue may tell us this is a 6-6 team. I don't know yet. I haven't eaten the barbecue. I don't know. But I don't feel like this is a 6-6 team.
That's fair. I think there are a number of kind of all conference level players on this team, more on defense than on offense, as you said.
Yeah.
But I think, linebacker secondary are really strong points of this team. There's a lot of good players at those positions, a lot of difference makers. And we need that, right? We need guys that can make, you know, not just, you know, do the job, but make something happen, make a positive play happen for us.
Well, again, and that's 93, 94. I mean, remember what that defensive backfield did to Florida and LSU in 93 and 94. How many interceptions did they snag? How many pick sixes? That 20-game win streak, a lot of that, especially in 94, was on the defense, and particularly the defensive backs. And this team has got much better linebackers than Terry Bowden's teams ever had, with the possible exception of when he had...
Takiyo,
right, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Other than that, this team is much better stacked up at linebacker than that. So, again, not saying we're going 12-0, but I'm just saying... We've been in worse position personnel-wise. We're going to have to see what this staff can do with them. And that's going to be very interesting. Demetrius Robinson.
Yeah, the Georgia transfer, the former five-star receiver who actually started his career at Cal out of high school in the Georgia area, went to Cal, then went to Georgia, transferred to Auburn in the offseason, finished his exams at Georgia over the weekend and transferred, was on campus now. And we don't expect him to be, you know, the whole offense or anything, but a veteran receiver who has a lot of catches and a lot of game experience, and the coaching staff's familiar with him. There was talk today about how Bobo, you know, recruited him and he was a freshman in high school and that kind of thing. So I think they know him, he knows them, and they know what he can do and not do. And I think another, you know, a veteran playmaker kind of receiver who can, you know, be a reliable guy while they're bringing the other young receivers along, I think is a good thing.
So as long as he doesn't turn out to be another like this Farrar guy that we got last year, year before, that we're like, oh, this is the guy that's going to stretch the field for us, man. He's going to be, you know, the next big thing, and I don't think I remember him ever catching a pass.
I hear you. And I don't think they would have allowed this guy to transfer if that was going to be the case right now. I think they'd be pickier. But also, like, if he doesn't play, it's because the younger receivers are better than him and they're making plays. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I think so that's the scenario. If he doesn't play, it's because the younger guys have stepped up and beat him out and they're making plays. And then I'm okay. Then we're good. Yeah.
We've just had a spotty, a very up and down, a very Auburn history of bringing in transfer receivers because some of them have been like Ronnie Daniels, just a home run, grand slam. Some of them have been kind of like sometimes good, sometimes bad. Like
certainly Duke is Duke. They're on TV more than Leave It to Beaver reruns.
We all remember Duke Williams. He had his moments, and he had his moments. But so I'm just really kind of hoping this guy can surprise everybody. Because, again, that would be just one more big player. You know, the 93 team had Frank Sanders, 94. Would love to have somebody like that, so.
I'm saying let's not put that on him. I'm just saying veteran guy that could come in and make a few catches on third down and that kind of thing and be a leader for that group. But that's what I want out of him.
Consistency. You have a note here.
And this is something that was really specifically aimed at the wide receivers when Harsin was asked about what is he looking for, and he said consistency. Hmm. He wants them to know where they're supposed to go, to be able to read the defense and the coverage. And based on the play design and stuff and what the defense is giving them, go to the right place and be in the right position, ready to make the play every time and do execute what they're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. And so I think – and you heard this a lot in other positions too. I think Derek Mason talked about it. He's not looking for guys to be perfect. This is what he said. He's looking for guys to be consistent.
Yeah.
Because he can trust that. And so that makes a lot of sense to me, right, that he wants guys who are consistent, that they are doing, you know, as hard as they can every time, and they know what they're supposed to do, and they're executing. It doesn't mean that they're perfect, but they're going all out every time, and that they, you know, have some ideas what they're supposed to be doing. So I think that's a big thing. We got a big group of unproven receivers, and I think especially at that position, the players that emerge are going to be the ones that are consistent in practice from now to the start of the season.
That for some reason reminded me of something funny I was going to share real quick. I'm reading that book, The Club, which is about the history of the English Premier League, because it ties in so much to what's happening in college football right now. And there was this great, great little story I read today where they said that Chelsea on the way up was about to play Liverpool, and the winner would be in one of the four that gets to go to the Champions League and would have like £10 million of new money coming in. The loser finishes fifth, doesn't get to go to the Champions League, doesn't get all that money. So it was like the £10 million game or something they were calling it. And they didn't know, by the way, that Roman Abramovich, the Russian billionaire oligarch, was also watching the game, and he didn't want to buy a team that wasn't going to go to the Europe, to the Champions League. So it was actually like the $7 billion game. They just didn't know that. But anyway, the funny thing was, so the manager brought in a U.S. Marine, retired Marine general, former commandant of the Marine Corps, big Vietnam veteran, you know, had led through battles at Vietnam and everything. They brought him in, and he gave this stem winder, rousing speech to the players about sacrifice and helping your brothers and fighting to the last man. And said at the end of that speech, the players were all like, ah, they're ready to run through a wall and just go out and murder Liverpool. And the manager's like, all right, everybody go home. Game's tomorrow. How do you do that? How do you bring in the motivational speaker the day before? I was just flabbergasted. So they had to go home, go to bed, get up the next day, and get remotivated again. That's something Doug Barfield would have done. All right, let's see. One last little tidbit was Bobby Bowden. And I just thought we'd mention that really quick because we had Terry as our coach for obviously several years there, 93 through 90, part of 98. And that was like the few years that we didn't hate Florida State. But they've always been an interesting team. I've always kind of been fascinated by them. And, you know, they did the 14 straight years of finishing in the top five, which is just insane.
Well, and I think people today do not appreciate where Florida State came from to get to there, right? They were basically a teacher's college in the northern part of Florida. They do not have a history of college football. You know, they're becoming a university and a football program, you know, really was a, you know, basically a thing that happened like in the 70s, you know. They didn't have a program. It just kind of emerged, and they kind of went from nothing to a little bit to a Division I team. And so they had no big history. They don't have huge the numbers of alumni that a lot of other schools did, and the same kind of financial base that a lot of schools had. And then Bowden was hired, and Auburn almost, you know, he was on the list when we were talking to Vince Dooley.
Oh, yeah.
To try to hire the coach that became Dye. Because he was, you know, he had some familiarity with coaching in Alabama. And, but he, that run was amazing and very impressive. They were in the top five for 14 years in a row, won a national title in there, should have won two or three more, but lost to Miami several times on missed kicks that kept them out of the title game.
Well, I guess they won in under Bowden in 93 and 99, right? That 93 is the one where they had a loss and we didn't, and yet we both had Bowdens. We went undefeated, but they won the national championship, which was so weird. We were going to play them in 99, and we backed out of it. And then I think they went, I think they were like, they went pole to pole number one that year, 99. I think that's right. That I think that was the year they beat Michael Vick in the bowl, in the Virginia Tech.
So they
won two under Terry.
Sugar Bowl.
Yeah, they won two under Terry and one under, I mean under Bobby and one under Jimbo. Who came from the Terry Bowden coaching tree. So it's really Terry Bowden's national championship that year. But yeah, his mother, Bobby Bowden's mother, lived in Childersburg, like 10 minutes up the road from where I'm from. And yeah, he talked about coaching at Alabama and Auburn over the years and never got to do either one. But he did build that program at Florida State from nothing. They were a team that would they couldn't get teams to come to them. And we know all about that, right? And so they would go anywhere, you know, any place, any time, and they would, like, go play Nebraska, play Michigan. You know, they were famous for being, like, the road warriors. They'd go all these places. They had a great offense. They would get great offensive NFL players, but they had terrible defense. And so you'd get games like when we beat them 42-41 in 1984 and then 59-27 in 1985. So, yeah.
But then they – you know, later they got to the point where, you know, the defensive talent caught up and they had just a, you know, just a wave of amazing NFL defensive players, Deion Sanders and, you know, Peter Boulware and a gazillion other players. But they,
Yeah, it kind of sucked for them that their great high point came along about the same time Miami's did. And so you got all those huge Florida State-Miami games back in the late 80s and the 90s and everything. And that was their stumbling block. There's always, you know, every dynasty always has that one stumbling block out there, and that was theirs. But, you know, just like when Tennessee was really good, they always lose to Florida. You know, there's always that one team that just has your number kind of. The team that had our number back in the 80s was Florida State and Tennessee, weirdly enough. Those are the two teams we had the hardest time with in the 80s. We were slapping Alabama around left and right, man, slapping Georgia around like they were nothing. But we'd struggle with Johnny Majors and Bobby Bowden. So, well, anyway, I had a question here. I want to ask you this. How do you think that last season will be remembered? I mean, clearly right now we don't have any perspective on it. But I got to thinking about it, and I'm like, you know, in a few years, we're going to refer back to 2020 as that weird season, right? I mean, you know, it's going to be vivid for us because it was Gus's last year and stuff. But I look, it's going to be kind of considered like the forgotten season, the lost season. And I think that Auburn's record last year, we went 6-4, but we wouldn't have played, I guess, South Carolina, but we would have played like North Carolina and probably lost, and then we'd have won a couple of games over Cupcakes, and that would have put us at 8-4. And of course, with Gus still being our coach, we'd have gone and lost our bowl game, and guess what? 8-5. So I firmly believe that last season would have been another 8-5 season. Do you think that Gus would have gotten fired if we had a regular season last year and gone 8-5? Because I do.
I don't know. It depends on who the wins and losses were against. I mean, I think that's a big piece of it. I guess when you ask this question about how will 2020 remember, you're thinking about Auburn specifically, not just college football in general.
Well, I think both.
Okay. I mean, I think it'll be always remembered as kind of the weird, oddball COVID season with no fans in the stands and weird game schedules like the SEC only schedule and that kind of thing, which kind of, when you look back in history at this season's, the record books are all going to be screwed up because of this one year.
Exactly.
That was so different. So I think that's a big thing. Because some teams played 5 games, some teams played 10 games or whatever. So I think that's going to be a real weird thing looking back in history. From the Auburn perspective, I think it was, a disappointing season, but also kind of the inevitable Gus conclusion that we were on the ramp towards. And so in that sense, I don't know how much of a difference it made the schedule.
Yeah. I think they were ready to let him go, and 6-4 just – and losing to South Carolina, that pretty much was the last straw. But I think we would have gone 8-5 again, and he would have been 8-5 almost every season, which is crazy. One other note, programming note, we have a special guest coming on next week. Looking forward. We haven't done that in a while. We haven't had a visitor in the hallowed halls of the AU Wishbone. So we're going to have an Auburn specialist, beat reporter type. We don't have Brandon around anymore, but we've got somebody coming in. So we'll spring that on you next, I believe it's next week, on the 16th or the 17th, depending on when it airs. And we, of course, have the SEC barbecue special. Are we doing that on the 23rd?
It'd be 2 weeks from today.
2 weeks from today.
So brace yourself.
Yeah, if you're one of our listeners, and we have a few that listen like in the middle of the night on Monday night, then you'll hear it 2 weeks from today as we're recording this. But if you are our majority of our listeners that listen to it on like Tuesday morning or during the day on Tuesday, then it is, you'll be hearing it 2 weeks from when you're listening to it. So that's how time works. Isn't that crazy, man? But yeah, it's for those that don't know, people are probably like, what are you even talking about barbecue? What's all this barbecue talk? What are we talking about, John?
Well, in the ancient days, the Romans and the Greeks and other people would cut open the entrails of an animal to read the future.
Yes.
And to determine if the omens were propitious.
Yes.
And so what we are doing is channeling the spirits of the barbecue. We eat barbecue, and it tells us things live on the air during the show, and the barbecue gives us sight into what is going to happen in the SEC football season, and we predict the record for each team.
This is perfectly described. That's exactly right. It is. And I like your historical allusions there, because that's exactly what we do. It is. And it worked out great for the Romans. That's So I'm sure it'll work out great for us too. But we've been doing this for several years now. It was one of our earliest features that we annually do, and it's usually our most popular show. And we have to go out and secure good barbecue during the day so that we'll have it here ready to go. Sometimes we make our own, sometimes we get it from places, and sometimes we mix in a little chicken, a little brisket, a little pork, you know, depending on who the opponent is, and so that'll be fun. We'll have that coming up in 2 weeks. So two big shows coming up over the next 2 weeks. Don't miss it. I don't believe there was a Formula One race this weekend, so all the results have stayed the same. We are in the summer break right now, so it'll be two or three more weeks before we get another Fantasy Formula One update. Probably Labor Day weekend, which I think is also Dragon Con weekend. So I know that there are a number of our listeners who go to Dragon Con. If you do, I will be there as always. I am a guest as always. I'll be on like 17 panels and a bunch of video pre-recorded ones we've already recorded. And I'll have my table at Comic Artist and Pop Artist Alley in one of like the Merchandise Mart, Apparel Mart, big exhibit hall buildings. I think I'm probably going to be next. Hopefully they'll get it right this year. They keep moving us around, but I should be next to Jared, the yard sale artist, so he and I can cooperate. And if you have a book that you want signed, John won't be there, but you can get Jared, who did the illustrations, and me to sign it, and then we'll figure out John later. We'll figure something out. But you can get at least two of us there. So come on down to Dragon Con in Atlanta, Labor Day weekend. Looking forward to it. Well, we got to quickly thank the folks that keep our program on the air, because we do not do commercials. We are not trying to, well, we are trying to sell you something. We're trying to sell you a book. But that's because we want you to like the book. We're not just saying go out and buy this cold medicine or this brand of vodka or something. We're saying we have a cool book that we put a lot of effort into. But other than trying to sell you that, we just are supported by our listeners, and we thank them every episode. If you want to join their ranks and help us keep this show going, help us go to Texas A&M to bring you all kind of video and audio stuff that we're going to record on the way there, and all the other stuff that we do. If you want to be a part of our basketball pick'em coming up in the spring, there's a lot of things that we do. We're doing the Fantasy Formula One right now. We do a lot of different things during the year for our patrons. Then go to www.auwishbone.com, www.auwishbone.com. I've also updated that site so that now you can just click on the big book cover, and it takes you straight to the Amazon page where you can order the book. Here are the fine folks who are currently keeping our program going. They include Chris and Clinton Stewart, plus Carl Von Drucker, Christopher Burleson, Jeremiah Schumann, Patrick Hayes, Samuel Salvatore, Allison Rich. We've had a little churn, a little turnover at the top. That's cool. Some new names there. Bart Lindsay, Bradley Blackman, Chris Usher, Gary Grant, AU fan at KSC, Logan Chilton, Michael Kirshner, Phil Amthor, Richard Stevens, Steve Trawick, Susan Trawick, Trombone Tiger, Willie Carden, Ann Kangian, AU Falling Up, Ben and Eileen Dover, Ben Bloodworth, Clay Henson, Dan Thompson, Daniel Odom, David Evers, David Hegler, Emmanuel Seaman, Eric Morgan, I think that's Bobby, George Gaston, Jacob and Robin Fleming, John Otsuki, Catherine England, Kevin Smith, Mickey B, Phil Davis, Preston Settle, and Reynolds Wolf, Rich Reimer, Steve Harlan, there goes Davis, oh good old Rusty, WDE Richie, Wes Atkinson, William Morgan, Wilson Beard, Winston Boddy, and Blake Heron. By the way, all these folks got their name in the first few pages of the book, we believed. Boris the Tiger, Cato the Barner, Chris the Hilton, three of my favorites in a row there. They're now on page 2 because we've added a couple of people to the front. That's awesome. Colby Butler, Danny Flack, Darris Benton, David Simpson, Di Bama, any minute now, Earl Ricks, Eric Mahan, Hugh Anderson, Josh Teal, Kevin Kanoy, Kevin Mahan, Lane Middleton, Melissa Blackstone, Mike Finley, Algorithm, Papa Todd, Patrick Williams, Randall Walker, Rob Morgan, Ross, Russell Milling, Sarah Hines, Sasquatch, Shane Bailey, Shannon Butson, Snowdog, Stephen Houston. This is the year Bo Nix has improved so much under this new offense. He's focused. He's having fun. I wouldn't be surprised if... Thank you, Harvey. Dang it. Tim Pittman, Tony Perry, Alex Nguyen, Auburn Elvis, Ben Amos, Ben Riggis, Brandon Smith, Charles Mooney, Chris Como, Colonel Dad, Daniel Barnett, Darren Pyle, David Smiley, Donnie Reynolds, Ice Cream Clone, new one, James Taylor, Jason Albrick, the Weasel Skull, John Stubbs and John Zavachin, plus a few more. But I think we've added some Babylon 5 show patrons, which is awesome. Joey Miller, Joseph Iliff, Justin Bean, Kathy Bright. Kathy, looking forward to seeing you at DragonCon for sure. Kenneth Brent Rains, Kyle Cram Clams in Clean Clam Can 76 Tiger. You guys are just abusing. You're abusing your privilege, dang it. It is funny, though. Mark Squire, Matthew Flowers, Mick Vigicana, Paul Bankson, Public Land Owner, Robert Drain, Russell Souther, Ruth, and Darren Sutherland, Spanky, Stephen Thompson, Trevor Johnson, Brent Rumble, Chris, plus our one-time and anonymous donors. We thank you all. Go to www.auwishbone.com. Join in the fun. Join in the madness. Keep hope alive. All right.
I just want to thank everyone who made Van read that silly stuff. That was spectacular.
They are doing their share to keep the show as entertaining as the law will allow. I think it's time for everybody's favorite segment, John. Are you ready?
Bring it on.
Jared is always there for us, and the fans are always there for him, hooking him up with good ideas. Let's do it. Who can it be
now? Greetings to Van, John, and the rest of the AU Wishbone family. This is Jared Albrick, the Yard Sale Artist with Guess the Game, Episode 22. Episode 22 is brought to you by AU Wishbone listener Rich Reimer. This is his suggestion, and let's get to it.
Some nice runs as well. Got an 11-yard scamper just a moment ago for the first down. Remember, went for two earlier in the game. Missed it. Had they gone for one, hey, it'd be a four-point advantage, and it would have to be a touchdown right now for Auburn. Instead, we've got a different script with 15 seconds to go. 12th play of the drive, 2nd and 7. Watch it. At the bottom of the screen, big receiver. Up and up, open, touchdown! You call it, wow!
All right, gentlemen, let's see what you can come up with.
All right, so I was thinking about the announcers a little bit. But it was a game Auburn played where the other team went for two earlier. Mm-hmm. And that made it was so Auburn was down, would have been down four, but we're down. Or maybe Auburn went for two earlier. But either way, somebody went for two. Mm-hmm. And so Auburn was having to potentially kick a field goal at the end. But then they ended up throwing it to a big receiver, mm-hmm. unnamed, mm-hmm. for a touchdown.
With like 15 seconds to go or something.
Yes. So not at the end of the game, but...
Man, these last couple have killed me. There's usually something that gives it away or at least gives me a... It's kind of like I wouldn't say 3 weeks ago, but we've had a couple weeks off. Three episodes ago... Oh. We wanted to thank our listeners. We put on We Believed episode 1 and 2 while we were going on our vacations. So hope you guys... enjoyed that. We don't love doing reruns, but there are times we just have to. So hopefully that worked out.
We're in the middle of guessing the game.
I know, but I forgot to say that.
Okay.
All right. What I was going to say was like 2 or 3 weeks ago, remember when I totally blew it? I just wet the bed on national radio here. All my confidence is gone. I haven't known anything since that happened. I just lost. I lost it. I got the yips.
Van's got the guess the game yips.
I got nothing. I'm dying over there.
Okay. What about the comeback against Texas A&M where Seth Williams caught a bunch of passes at the end of the game?
Mm.
That was 20...
18.
18?
It was Stidham. It was Stidham's second year, so it was 18.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was in Auburn.
Mm-hmm.
And we play them in College Station in odd years, like this year.
Yep.
So it was. It had to have been in Auburn. It had to be an even year. It was Jarrett Stidham throwing to Seth Williams.
Didn't he have a couple scores at the end of that game, or am I crazy?
Yeah. Oh, heck yeah. We were down like 10 or 14 or something in the fourth quarter.
And he scored. And if he scored, and then... And then we were down, and they went to him again. All right, that's my guess. But let's listen to the hit because
I'm going to go back and try to catch the beginning of the clue one more time. Let me see if I can get in the middle of it here.
Rich Reimer, let's get to it.
Some nice runs as well. Got an 11-yard scamper just a moment ago for the first down. Remember, went for two earlier in the game, missed it. Had they gone for one, hey, it'd be a four-point advantage, and it would have to be a touchdown right now for Auburn. Instead, we've got a different script with 15 seconds to go. 12th play of the drive, 2nd and 7.
Watch it. At the bottom of the screen, big receiver.
Up and up. Open touchdown! You called it. Wow!
All right, gentlemen.
Okay, so... yeah, I deciphered the two-point thing there. If they had gone for two and if they'd made it, they'd be up four and they would have...
we would have had to go for a touchdown, but yes, we were still potentially could have gone for a field goal. So it was maybe we were down three.
Or two. Yeah. I feel like we weren't that far. I feel like we were further behind A&M.
No, but this would have been the second touchdown he caught.
Yeah.
Not the first one.
Yeah. I don't have any reason to doubt that it's that game. I just don't have a high confidence level.
No, I don't either. I mean, I'm just throwing it out there.
You want to go to the hint?
Let's go to the hint.
We could spend all night trying to think of another game, but honestly, I don't think I'm going to think of one. So how long ago did that sound like?
Yeah, that was Mark Jones, who was the primary play-by-play guy, I think.
I don't know. I didn't recognize
the voice. I'm trying to figure out what network and therefore what caliber of opponent and all that kind of
and
stuff.
And what time of day. Yeah.
Not the prime time game, the big CBS game or the prime time night game. So
no.
But let's go to the hint file.
All right, let's go to the hint file. It always feels like giving up in a way, but well, maybe the hints can help us out.
John, you are now in the hint file. Let's get rid of those bleeps and give it a listen.
Some nice runs as well. Got an 11-yard scamper just a moment ago for the first down. Remember, Mississippi State went for two earlier in the game. Missed it. Had they gone for one, hey, it'd be a four-point advantage, and it would have to be a touchdown right now for Auburn. Instead, we've got a different script with 15 seconds to go. 12th play of the drive, 2nd and 7.
Watch 81 at the bottom of the screen. Big receiver.
Up and up. Open. You call it. Wow.
Oh, my confidence is high on you on this one, boys. I suspect you've got it, but I'll see you in the answer file.
Well, that was CJ Uzomah against Mississippi State. That's who that was.
I thought we just did that game.
Or it's some kind of tricky version where we're going back, but I'm pretty sure that's who he said, right? He said 81.
Yeah.
And then I thought he said Uzomah at the end of the after the catch.
Fan John, you are now in the hint file. Let's get rid of those bleeps and give it a listen.
Is killing me.
Some nice runs as well. Got an 11-yard
by who?
Just a moment ago for the first down. Remember, Mississippi State went for two earlier in the game, missed it. Had they gone for one, hey, it'd be a 4-point advantage, and it would have to be a touchdown right now for Auburn. Instead, we've got a different script with 15 seconds to go. 12th play of the drive, 2nd and 7.
Watch 81 at the bottom of the screen. Big receiver.
Up and up. Open. Touchdown. Uzomah, you call it. Wow.
Okay, so it was CJ.
Yeah, I mean, is that what he said at the end?
Yes. Uzomah. Okay. Uzomah. Right. Oh, something like that, yeah. Well, so that wasn't 2013 Mississippi State? Maybe he caught one against Mississippi State a different year. I mean, we know he caught a game winner against Mississippi State. The problem is the announcers didn't give us any information there. There was like two bleeps.
No, there was no information there other than the player, the Uzama's name.
Right? And Mississippi State.
Yeah, that's all we know.
We don't know the quarterback. We don't know the score.
Homer away. Yeah.
Yeah, we don't.
We know we were losing and then we were winning. So when did he catch a winning pass basically against Mississippi State?
2013, but I thought we just did that one. That's what confuses me.
Well, he didn't do it in 14 or 15?
I don't remember. Could he have really done it 2 years in a row? Was he still on the team in 14? I guess he was. I can't remember.
I feel like he was.
All right. Well, we know that 13 is correct. I just feel weird about that one. Let's just see. I'm just going to have to say we're going to have to find out.
Okay, John Van, here we are in the answer file. Once again, thanks to Rich Reimer for sending this one in. Rich sent in Auburn playing Mississippi State in 2013. Oh my goodness, I'd forgotten what a nail biter that one was. As always, if you would like to send in a suggestion for Guess the Game, you can hit me up on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. It is all at Yard Sale Artist. I still have plenty more to go through, but don't be shy. If you've got an idea, send it in. And with that, Van, John, War Eagle.
Oh, okay. We had a little technical glitch there for just a minute, but John, you were saying about Guess the Game, that tough one.
I have to thank Jared and Rich Reimer for that really good Guess the Game one, and I'd like to invite everybody else to submit 2013 Mississippi State also as a clue. We could just Jared could just give us random plays from that game and make us guess other games each time, and then but it would always be 2013 Mississippi State. I think that would be really funny. So
I swear, I mean, I may be completely wrong, and he's going to tell me later. I mean, I know, and I'll you know,
don't have facts to back that up.
I don't have facts to back this up.
And if I'm wrong, I will. But I just want to
dispel once and for all with this fiction.
I mean, because I heard it Mississippi State 2013, I'm like,
Come on, man.
But there you go. But
there
but
you
I mean,
go.
You know, I thought I understood it, but then.
But here, there are no civilized rules. I have business in the East.
Well, so Jared will just pack up and go to the SEC East.
All right, but that was a good one.
And, Jared's going to look at us and be like,
"Soon will be beyond my concern."
And that's it. So, there you go.
All right, it's Mr. Question Time.
Oh, it is. Hold on. We got to ask Mira to come.
Thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone podcast.
Holy cow! Oh my God!
What do we got tonight?
All right, our first question relates to our earlier discussion about Bobby Bowden. It comes from Bill Miner, who asks, in light of Bobby Bowden's passing, what is your favorite Auburn Florida State memory from when he coached that team?
Oh, man, because there's four. All right. I'm going to rank them, and then I want to hear your ranking, all right? There's four. Number four is Greg Carr intercepting them, and I just, you know, recently was researching all this for the book, so number four is Greg Carr's big interception against Florida State in 1983 to seal the win, when they were driving to win. Number three is the 1985 game where Bo ran wild. We turned the ball over a bunch in the fourth quarter. It was like 28-27, and then you blink your eyes, and it was 59-27, and Florida State just didn't know what truck ran them over. That tells you a lot about those four games. That's number three. But, I mean, number two is the 42-41 game. Just a track meet up and down the field. Bo didn't play. He was hurt. He'd gotten hurt against Texas. We had our backup running backs, and by backup, I mean Brent Fullwood and Collis Campbell and Kyle Collins and all those guys. We ran back a kickoff. That was number two. But I think my number one Florida State memory, because of the circumstances around it and how it played out, and we talk, again, the book, I don't want to keep saying the book, but we talk about this in the book, and I got a lot of quotes and stuff. 1990. Because we'd lost to them in 87, they ran over us, And then in 88, in the Sugar Bowl on a blatant pass interference. And then in 89, when I went down to Tallahassee with some other friends, and we lost in the yucky, humid weather. And we lost to them 3 years in a row, and they came in for what would be the last game in the series in 1990 in Auburn. And we recovered the fumble Ruski. We had that huge sack on whoever their quarterback was. I can't remember now. One of those three-name guys, I think.
Peter Tom Willis, maybe.
Yeah. And then we kicked that field goal. Jim Von Weil. It's good! It's good! Von Weil! It's good! How about that kid from Akron, Ohio? And you and I and all of our friends in a giant hug until we fell down three flights of steps together into the crowd and then did the tomahawk chop for 20 minutes at them.
We did, after the losses, you know, would you sit in a stadium with them and listen to that stupid chant for 4 hours and you beat them, it is a great feeling.
It is so great.
And we after three losses in a row, we were so sick of that stupid chant and that stupid team and those stupid fans. We were like doing the chant right back at them, and they ran for their lives out of that stadium. And it was a joyous occasion.
And the cherry on top was that they wrote letters to the Auburn Plainsmen the next week crying about how they didn't feel safe in our stadium with all the mean Auburn fans doing the tomahawk chop at them. And I'm like, you do that at everybody else all the time. And when somebody does it back at you for 5 minutes, it's suddenly the end of the world.
Well, it's now suddenly intimidating and bothersome.
Yes. Oh, really? Go figure.
And perhaps they could sense the feeling coming through that chain at them.
Annoyed
with them.
There was a lot of feeling. So how do you rank them then? 83, 84.
I'd agree with your ranking. Was it the 42-41 one, the one that wasn't on TV whatever?
Yes, it was unbelievable. It wasn't on TV.
I mean, again, one of the greatest games in Auburn history, and nobody got to watch it. So I think that one, but I agree 100%. That beating them at home in that game was a joyous occasion.
That was so great. That's the one where the Tiger Rag shirt had Aubie tying the chief onto a rocket to shoot him, like a big firework to shoot him out of the stadium and everything. And I got to be honest, going into that game, I did not think we were going to win. I did, and honestly, that ended up being the high point of the season of 90, and it was really Pat Dye's last big win.
It's true.
Yeah. So that's my favorite memory, is just kicking that field goal and the joy and hugging everybody.
Yeah.
And celebrating beating them finally in the rubber match, because we played them seven times that decade through 90, and that was the 4-3. We won four, they won three.
That's right.
So,
all right, we got two more questions. Okay. Next one is from Rusty Owens, frequent emailer, who says, good evening, gentlemen. I have been spending today listening to podcasts, and it's definitely prediction season. So based on that, I have a question. I will not ruin the sacredness of the barbecue episode.
He gets it. He gets it, see?
But without giving away a number for wins and losses, what is one thing that needs to happen for your prediction to come true?
Rusty respects the natural order of the universe, and he gets it. He knows what he can ask and what he can't ask, and I respect that about him. Good job. So what is the one thing that has to come true in order to what?
What is the one thing that has to come true for your prediction to come true?
Well, I mean, should we just start with like the offensive line has to play better?
No, but like, I think it's an underlying question.
Okay.
Right? So like, if you think the season is going to go a certain way,
mm-hmm.
and there's an assumption built into there, and that assumption has to happen for your thoughts about the season to go in that direction, kind of what is that assumption? Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Well, what do you think? Because I guess, you know, I'm not giving any numbers or anything, but I don't necessarily, like I said earlier, because I said this earlier, I don't think we're going to go 12-0. So I'm going to assume that when we go up, I guess the thing that's going to come true is that when we go up against the biggest teams, we're not always going to be able to move the ball. I think our defense is going to be pretty stout, but I'm not sure we're going to be able to move the ball enough.
I think that's my underlying assumption, is I think our defense is going to be really good.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's a good – that's a good one, too, is we'll do as well as we do because the defense is going to be surprisingly strong.
Yes.
Okay.
That's a good question.
It is.
And we had to think about it, but
I think there's a better answer out there, but I like the question. I apologize for my poor answer.
Mm. All right. And our last question comes from a friend of the podcast, Auburn Elvis.
Yes.
He says he was worried he sent it in too late, but I got it while we were recording. And he says, it's probably too late, but here's my question. Do you think too much of Taskmaster's identity from the comics was sacrificed to be a vehicle for Black Widow in the movies? He says, I do. The plan worked with Whiplash and Iron Man 2, but it failed with the Mandarin and Iron Man 3. What are your thoughts?
I like it. It's a Brandon Marcello type of question, although he's more of a DC guy. All right, I got a quick answer on this. I disagree. I totally agree. Mandarin ruined Iron Man 3. Mandarin is to Iron Man what the Joker is to Batman, what Lex Luthor is to Superman. If they had done the Joker the way they did the Mandarin, people would have been rioting in the streets, okay? I liked the Taskmaster in the Black Widow movie because I felt like in the comics, here's the thing. Taskmaster has two shticks. I'm going to make this quick, I promise. Taskmaster has two shticks. One is he can copy your moves. He has photographic reflexes. So if he watches Spider-Man, he can do the best a normal human could do. If he watches Daredevil, he could do that, right? If he watches Hawkeye, he can shoot a bow and arrow really good. He's like a human super adaptoid. Okay. His other shtick is he runs a school for flunkies. So like you ever wonder, where's the Red Skull get all those guys in the jumpsuits with the machine gun, right? Where does the other supervillain, where do they get their army of dudes in the jumpsuits, right? They're not Hydra. Where'd they come from? Taskmaster recruits these thugs in and trains them up to be flunkies for supervillains. I love that. My friend David Michelinie created that. I love it. Love it. Love it. But neither one of those, the photographic reflex thing worked okay in the movie. But the training an army of supervillain thugs is not something you can seriously do in an MCU movie. It's a cute idea from 1981. Not going to work in 2021 or 2020 was when they made the movie. You know. So instead, they kind of gave that shtick to the person that ran the Black Widow Academy. They were creating an army of assassins, right? Slightly tweaked it. So you still had the Taskmaster shtick. It was just given to another character who, instead of running a school for flunkies, was running a school for assassins, which is even better. Okay? That left the Taskmaster without a second shtick, and so without getting into spoiler territory, they gave the Taskmaster a different kind of thing going on. And I thought that was fine because it tied the Taskmaster more tightly into that story of that movie. So I had no problem with it. I thought it was fine. I know a lot of people did, and that's fine. Taskmaster's a good street-level villain, but I thought they did about the best they could with that character in a serious movie because you can't really do the old thing. So have you seen Black Widow?
I have. And I'd agree with your assessment. I think I don't think he's on the same level of villain as some of those other ones in it, and they did the best they could with him, I think.
Right. Yeah, I thought they made the character entertaining and tied into the story in a way that if he was just a mercenary, who cares?
Yeah.
So, again, try not to spoil too much. But all right, was that it?
That is it.
All right, way to go, Elvis, with the cool outside-the-box kind of question there. All right, so like I said, we've got...
Nope. I am wrong. I'm sorry. We had more questions, and I am completely apologize.
All right, let's hit it.
All right. This is from a patron of the podcast, Jeremiah Schumann,
okay,
who says, your new book covers 1975 to 1998. During that span, what would be three of the best, most entertaining games for me to find for a rewatch? Thank you.
Oh man, it's a big span, but we did just and you know, one of them the 84 Florida State game is on videotape. I've got it here. It may be on YouTube.
No. But that's out of all that time period, you're not picking that game. Because we're going to 98, you got to pick one of the Florida games from the Bowden era.
Yeah.
Which one would you pick, 93 or 94? For a person watching it cold.
It's a flip a coin. They're both amazing. I guess 94. I guess 94, but it's really close.
Okay. So 94 Auburn
at Florida.
Florida. I'm going to say
Is there an Iron Bowl?
I'm trying to think of an Iron Bowl during that time period that I'm like, yeah, that should definitely be it.
Well, the first time ever game was historic, but it wasn't an exciting wall-to-wall game.
It wasn't the most – that's what I was thinking. It was historically important but not the most entertaining wall-to-wall football game.
Yeah. The 86 Iron Bowl is pretty fun. Lawyer Tillman, Brent Fullwood.
Okay.
And, of course, 82 with Bo over the top is pretty good. Nothing's out there on video. I've noticed that there's a lot more Auburn games from olden days popping up on YouTube lately. There's a couple of different sources that have been putting like some of the 60s and 70s games up. So you can catch actually more Auburn games than you could about a month ago now. I've been noticing this. Is there a Georgia game that stands out as, oh, that's a must? We don't really have a lot of like barn burners with Georgia.
Mm-mm.
Not like we do with like LSU. I mean, obviously the interception game, 94. Yeah. Terry Bowden gave us a lot of these fun, wacky games.
Yeah, I mean, the 87 Auburn-Georgia was a fun game.
Yeah.
There was some Warrior Tillman in that game, too.
What about 87 Florida?
Yeah, that was a great game. 87 Florida is it, but I don't want to pick more than one Florida game.
Yeah, I know.
This is tough. So we could do an hour on this question.
We could.
I mean, is there a non-conference game that leaps out at you? That was really fun. I mean, we talked about the Florida State earlier, but is there another non-conference game that you're like, man, that was crazy fun?
97 Virginia.
Mm.
Damian Craig.
Okay. All right. All right.
But again, it's always Terry Bowden because those were just those wide open.
On the entertainment scale, there was more entertainment there.
Yeah. Pat Dye's era games are more like grind it out, you know, dive in for the touchdown. Terry's were like Damian Craig throwing the ball for 500 yards and crazy interceptions, return, you know, pick sixes and all. That's just how it is. Plus, there's more of them available because they're more recent. You know, if you're going up through 98.
Well, was there a game you would pick to say, like, this is the great Bo Jackson SEC game?
Well, that 85, you know what, that 85 Florida State game is on YouTube, and that is a lot of fun because it's like a barn burner until the very end, and then things get really weird. And Bo does a lot in that game.
All right. So that's our other choice then.
Yeah. All right. I can live with that.
Yeah.
You got another one?
Our last one is from Owlgorithm.
Yep.
Who says, with Texas and Oklahoma joining the SEC, would Auburn be better off in a different conference? I love being part of the SEC. I enjoy the rivalry's history and tradition and do not want a wee bit, but with two traditionally very strong teams joining the conference, Auburn's chance of winning the SEC title are worse than ever. Our ridiculous schedule will only get more difficult, and we may end up with fewer games against traditional rivals. Yep. As much as I hope Harsin will build Auburn to be a major powerhouse, we are likely to end up in the middle of the SEC and blow the new teams, or it is a different Power 5 conference. It might be an annual contender for conference title and automatic playoff slot.
Yeah. No, I understand that. I mean, it's like my heart says, yeah, man, let's get the heck out of here and join the ACC or the – you know, let's get where the pickings are a little easier. But this is what holds me back. I feel like the SEC is on the way to becoming the Premier League. And if you're not on that bus, you're not on the bus. You're just not, you know what I mean? It's like all of football will soon be the SEC. And we are fortunate to already be on the bus. If we were on the outside going, hey, can we get in the SEC? I don't know that we would get a spot. I mean, I think we would. I think, no, you know, we're one of the top 15 programs of all time, but
Auburn's not leaving the SEC. I mean, I don't care if we add three more teams, Auburn's not leaving the SEC.
Right, right. But I do think, though, that the SEC is eating college football, and it's going to be like the SEC is going to be college football.
Yeah, it is. But, and I guess I hear you. If you're an old school fan like us and your goal is like win the SEC, yes, it's going to get harder.
Yeah.
But on the other side, the goal of making the playoff is going to get easier, honestly, because it's going to be a 12-team playoff and the SEC schedule is going to get a bunch of credit from the voters, and we're going to see like five SEC teams in every time.
Because as we talked about on our last episode, what you just said sums it up. It's going to get harder to win the SEC, but easier to play for the national championship because this is another big indicator of the sport going from regional to national. The shift is not going to be on winning the SEC anymore. It's going to be getting into that national playoff, being relevant on the national stage. And I, you know, it's one of those things that back in the 80s and early 90s, I was hoping and praying for. And now I'm like, man, watch what you wish for because you might get it. And given my choice, I'd like to go back to a 10-team SEC that we win twice every 10 years, as opposed to a 20-team SEC that we win once every 30 years.
I hear you.
So I'm glad we've got 2010 and 2013 in our recent, you know, memory, because I feel like it's going to be, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe we're going to be the next dynasty, but there's just, it's like the lottery. When there's 10 people picking out of a hat, you got a good chance to pick the prize. But when there's this many and some of them going to be getting extra picks, it's going to be tough. And I'm not running away from competition. I'm just saying this is math, and math is a cruel mistress.
All right. On that note,
are we done?
We are done with Mr. Questions. So let's bring it
home. We got to take a quick trip. This won't take long. Go down to Quick Trip.
Please clap.
Let's take a trip around the FTC.
So we had the note about LSU's quarterback. We already talked about that. Do we have any other around the SECs of note?
I haven't seen any other practice stuff anywhere that really leapt out at me, heard anything.
Will Muschamp. Will Muschamp is special teams coordinator for Georgia now.
I did see something about that, but I'm also like...
How does that... I just don't know what to say. How do you go from head coach at Florida to special teams coordinator at Georgia in like how many ever years it's been? He was our defensive coordinator in 2015. Yeah. And then South Carolina in 16, 17, 18, 19, and then part of 20. Doesn't seem like he was at South Carolina that long, but I guess he was.
He was. And again, he was at Florida for a while before that. The other part of this is that the job he is taking is the Scott Cochran job. It was the strength and conditioning coach that
left
Alabama to go to Georgia to be an on-the-field coach, and this is his on-the-field position. So where is he?
Where did he go? He and unknown. Tyrone Truesdale are having beers somewhere in a barbecue.
Unknown,
shop.
But potentially the on-the-field coaching thing not working the way he wanted to.
Interesting. Very. All right. John, you and I are going to Texas A&M in November, if all things remain green for go. So we are still asking for suggestions. People have sent us plenty of good ones, but we just want to get kind of a consensus, and we want to get any that we've missed. Bearing in mind, we are flying into Houston and driving to College Station, so it's not like we can zip over to Lubbock or Amarillo or San Antonio. It's got to be kind of like the Houston to Texas A&M corridor. That's, we're not going to have a lot of time to be going on excursions beyond that sort of general area. So we welcome any suggestions you guys want.
Unless it's really, really, really good barbecue, and then in which case.
I mean, all bets are off. We may just skip the game and go eat the really, really, really good barbecue because we got to do what we got to do. But all right, any other thoughts?
No, other than it's exciting to actually talk about football again.
It is. I think at this point, I'm going to go ahead and put myself, I'm going to enter the portal. All right. John and I are entering the portal. So we are going to go ahead and get on out of here. Our time is up. Thank you for yours. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the AU Wishbone. Find links to everything we do at www.auwishbone.com. For more Auburn fun, join us on Twitter at @AUWishbone and at facebook.com/AUWishbone. War Eagle.
The AU Wishbone is produced by Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer. Copyright 2020.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone podcast.